Now then, I'd like for you to glance with me at Isaiah chapter 6. That's not my chapter. My chapter is 35. But I want to look at verse 1 of chapter 6, to which reference has already been made this day. But it does seem to me that Isaiah 6 and verse 1 is one of the most powerful statements that we have, not only in Isaiah, but in the entire Bible, for that matter. It has such a profound lesson that was emphasized in a morning session, but let me stress it right now. The prophet says, in the year that King Uzziah died, all in all, a very fine king, but turned away. In the year that King Uzziah died, I, Isaiah, prophet of God, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. A tremendously beautiful passage. The earthly king has died. The earthly throne is empty. But that doesn't mean that the heavenly throne is empty. God is still on his throne and in control of the world, whether Old Testament or New Testament time, whether patriarchy, Judaism, or Christianity. That's a lesson that flows not only throughout the book of Isaiah, but throughout the Bible. A great, great message. I assume, as the word Lord generally does in the Old Covenant, that there is specific reference to Lord in the sense of Jehovah God. But also there has to be, dealing with prophecy, a glance at the Jesus the Christ, the Lord of glory. I saw on that throne, the throne of divine dominion, Jehovah God. One reason I know it has to pick up a reference to or be a reference to the Lord himself is John 12:41. These things said Isaiah because he, Isaiah, saw his glory and spake of him. Chart number 3, Brother Bob. That's not normally my way of counting, 3, 2, 1, but I'll start with number 3. Isaiah said, and the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come unto Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. Ponder it well. Then turn with me quickly to Hebrews 12:22. But ye are come unto Mount Zion, the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come unto Zion. And when I turn to the book of Hebrews, it's already taken place. Ye are come unto Mount Zion, unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to the innumerable host of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn. I'm putting ones in parenthesis there because it belongs there. It's plural and not singular, referring to members of the church of the Lord, the firstborn ones who are enrolled in heaven. 800 years before this passage is written, that one had been written. They shall come unto Zion, and inspiration says they have. There is, without doubt, generally a fairly near, perhaps a short time application with regard to the prophetic message, whatever, whether it's Isaiah, Jeremiah, but there is also that remote, that distant application of the prophetic message. Now we're going to glance at Isaiah 35, And I don't think you have that on a chart, Brother Bob. But let me read to you, or you read with me. Either way. Isaiah, God through Isaiah said, "The wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them. The desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it. The excellency of Carmel and Sharon, they shall see the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God." Verse 3, "Strengthen ye the weak hands, confirm the feeble knees. Say unto them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with a recompense. He will come and save you. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as an hart or a deer, and the tongue of the dumb will sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert. The parched land, the glowing sand, shall become a pool, and thirsty land springs of water. In the habitation of dragons where reach lay, shall be grass with reeds and rushes." Oh, what a statement. "And an highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those, the wayfaring men, the fools, shall not err therein. No lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast shall go up thereon. It shall not be found there. But the redeemed shall walk there, and the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come unto Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness. Sorrow and sighing shall flee away." In this book we have, first of all, the prophecies of Isaiah relating to the times of the people to whom the book was first addressed, and circumstances of Isaiah's own day, with particular emphasis upon the point that Israel ought to trust in Jehovah, not in Assyria or in Egypt, verses or chapters 1 through 39. Second, we have the prophecies of Isaiah relating to the Babylonian captivity, the fact of it, the duration of it, the hope that God's people would have in it, and the deliverance from it, chapters 40 through 66. 66 chapters in the Bible, 39 books in the Old Testament, 27 in the New. 66 books in Isaiah, 39 in part 1, 27 in part 2. It's an easy way to remember the division of the book. Our present study is chapter 35. And in this chapter comes the first portion, or it comes within the scope of this first portion, and the portion which stresses that the people of Judah, the people of Judah, the southern kingdom, ought to trust in God, not in human alliances and entanglements. A hurried glance at the comment of G. Campbell Morgan. I have tremendous respect, especially in survey-type work, for the writings of G. Campbell Morgan. Mr. Morgan himself said, "I never undertake to write an analysis of any book of the Bible until I have first read it 40 times. I think I'm doing well if I read Isaiah 10 times. But imagine. Mr. Morgan says on this great chapter, he says the message of this chapter stands in close relation to the message of the preceding one, and yet an almost startling contrast to it. That was a picture of desolation. This is one of restoration. As in the former, the whole earth was described as having been brought into confusion and emptiness. This great song opens with a description of the restoration of the natural order. in all the beauty and the glory of His rule. Men are to see anew the glory of Jehovah and the excellency of God. This is to be brought about by the coming of God. It is a message of hope, hope to the weak and the feeble. It is the explanation of the fearful vengeance described in the previous chapter. Through vengeance, God moves to victory. He continues, the glorious issues of the divine activity are then declared, as they will be realized by His own chosen people. There will be an end of all of the spiritual dullness of which the prophet has so consistently reminded them. All material defense will be removed, and a highway will be constructed. Finally, the ransomed of the Lord will return, and the sorrow and sighing shall pass away. According to the whole teaching of the Old Testament concerning the purposes of God, this restoration of His people will issue in a worldwide blessing. I want to suggest to you a basic outline. We'll try to keep it in mind as we study further the chapter. This would be our chart number one. Is that what you have, Bob? As was the case with Jeremiah, so it was with Isaiah. Jeremiah spake of better days and better times ahead for the people of God. Better times ahead in the near time future, but many of his prophecies reached out to include the remote future. I simply cite hurriedly Jeremiah 31. We know that that was a discussion of a better covenant, better times ahead between Israel and Judah upon their return from this captivity. But at the same time, inspiration applies those statements to the new covenant and quotes them in Hebrews 13. Likewise, in some of Isaiah's prophecies, these relate both to the near time future, but many related and do relate to the Christ and His kingdom, His church. And even reach out to involve or to encompass the eternal aspect or phase of the kingdom of the Christ. We call it heaven itself. Here's the basic outline. First of all, we have declaration made, declaration that better times are coming, verses 1 and 2. We have exhortation following that, verses 3 and 4. Exhortation to strive, to strengthen each other. Strive to strengthen others. Number 3, we have marvelous blessings are talked about, verses 5 through 7. There are, says the prophet, marvelous blessings ahead. And then number 4, we have a marvelous discussion of God's highway, verses 8 through 10. God's highway. The king's a highway. I have from time to time, more often than in days past, than in frequent use, preached about the king's a highway, simply drawing upon what is said in this book about the church of our Lord. I'm not going to read the rest of that, because when we come to number four, Bob, then we'll pick up the other chart and get the details here. There is, in fact, the promise of it and the name of it. Those who will not travel upon it, and those who will travel upon it, and then the marvelous blessings to be experienced in it. So we have those points when we come to the King's Highway. All right, in the next 21 minutes, let's see what we can do. First of all, we're going to glance at that declaration. Declaration as we have it in verses 1 and 2. Better times are coming. The reading is, the wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them. The desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it. The excellency, the beauty of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God. These verses certainly constitute a great and wonderful promise to the distressed people. Those who are distraught and those who were in desperate circumstances, those who were extremely discouraged. The promise is couched in words that are beautiful and tremendously poetic. We note the words of wilderness and solitary place and the word desert. We note also the words of glad and rejoice and joy and singing and glory. At excellency, what beautiful words. The first words describe the circumstances of those persons who are here addressed as they had been and as these circumstances, in fact, were or then were, as they were at the time of the writing. The other words of beauty, they're words of beauty and hope and relief and joy. They set forth the circumstances as they were to become and as they were to continue to be. Better days ahead, even in the near future. But looking out to encompass the remote future, including the church and the gospel and eternity itself. God's people, wasted and kept under by wicked rulers and by other wicked people, would see these wicked rulers and these wicked people overthrown. The horrible wilderness would be turned into good land. When the land of Judah was freed from the Assyrian power, the land that the Assyrian army had completely ravaged to the point of its becoming a literal wilderness, that land began to recover itself, even to become beautiful and to blossom as the rose. But the greater joy, the greater happiness, the greater beauty to which the prophet looked would come in connection with the Christ, His church, and His kingdom. By church kingdom, I'm putting a slash there or a hyphen, not two different things, the church of the Lord, the kingdom of the Christ. This would be the real significance of the beauty and the joy and the glory and the singing, and these marvelous blessings would reach out as previously indicated, even to include heaven itself. There is one great lesson as we traverse these passages, is the fact that there is to be joy. The prophet said there will be joy in the kingdom of the Christ. Philip preached the gospel in Samaria, Acts 8. And when those people heard, when they saw the signs that he did, they became obedient to the faith. And the record says, Acts 8, verses 4 through 8, there was much joy in that city. The Lord's own tutored and trained men were to go and bear fruit. What beautiful fruit it was, John 15, 16. When the eunuch of Ethiopia made the proper response to the preaching that Philip had done for the eunuch's benefit, when he made this proper response, the record says, he went on his way rejoicing. Even when they were fastened, Paul and Silas, fastened in stocks and bonds in the inner prison, their feet hurting, their backs bleeding, yet they were praying and they were singing hymns unto God, and the prisoners were listening to them. They learned the great lesson that all of us must learn. The record places upon us the obligation and the sacred privilege of learning to rejoice even in tribulation. We've often said in the classroom to men preparing to preach the gospel, you've got to learn to smile with tears running down your cheeks. Paul states it this way, inspiration through Paul, rejoice in the Lord. Once in a while, or sometimes when the sun is shining at all, and all, rejoice in the Lord always. And again I will say rejoice. Isaiah saw the great joy that would be realized in the Christ, in the church of the Christ, upon the terms of the gospel of the Christ. Joy in the kingdom. But there's also glory in connection with the kingdom. Peter and James and John were with the Lord on the Mount of Transfiguration. There appeared unto them Moses and Elijah talking with him. And the record says plainly, these appeared in glory and spake of his, the Lord's decease. You know the Greek word is Exodus there? The Lord's Exodus. Of his decease which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Peter and those with him were heavy with sleep, but when they were fully awake, they saw his glory. Voice from out of the cloud said, this is my beloved Son, in whom I'm well pleased to hear ye him. And a man named Peter, at least Peter, never forgot that amazing scene. He declared Second Peter 1, we were eyewitnesses. We're not telling you, we're not writing to you something that has been fabricated by a human mind. We were eyewitnesses. We saw him, we talked with him. We were eyewitnesses of his majesty. Daniel 7, in prophetic vision, Daniel saw the Lord ascend upon the wings of the clouds. Watch the clouds as they brought the Lord to the very place of entrance into and before the Ancient of Days. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. And so a glance at the declaration that better times ahead. Followed by verses 3 and 4, exhortation summarized on the chart by strengthen each other. Strive always to strengthen each other. Strengthen ye the weak hands. Confirm, make strong, establish, confirm the feeble knees. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with a recompense. He will come and save you. Tremendous words of encouragement to a distressed and distraught people. The first part of the exhortation is simply instruction. Instruction for these addressed to strengthen those who are weak, those who are faint-hearted. This is one of the greatest responsibilities carried by God's people, even or including our time in the church of the Lord. Faithful, devoted, capable leaders of God's people must be anxious, not just willing, but anxious to strengthen each other. Strengthen the membership. Strengthen eldership working among themselves, striving to help each other, but at the same time, every Christian being concerned about strengthening each other. The New Testament has a lot to say on the topic of edification of the saints. Some people are weak because they're babes in Christ. We expect coming to, here's a man, maybe 65 years old, he learns the gospel, is baptized into the Christ, he's a babe in Christ. 65-year-old baby, yes. But it's distressful if he doesn't grow. One of the saddest scenes I ever did see, and I pray God I shall never see it again. Weatherford, Texas, a long, long time ago. Conducting the funeral service for a little child, a little boy. Well, was it a little boy or a man? I don't know. But anyhow, over 20 years of age, barely 22 inches long. I thought of the hundreds of people gathered in that room whose hearts had been broken to pieces over these years because this little person never made proper growth or development. And then I thought to myself how we must grieve the mind of God when we recognize that there are members of the church who have been in the church 10, 15, 20, 25 years, but who are scarcely one inch taller spiritually than the way the day that they were the day they were born into the family. That's sad. That's terrible. It's hard. One comes into the kingdom as a babe, but with a great responsibility and opportunity to become strong in the Lord, to grow in the Master's service. Numerous are the verses that emphasize that. I can wish for time to study them with you. You can read them in the book. That is at least the citation of them. You may want to spend some time meditating upon that particular point. God's emphasis upon our obligation, our privilege to help each other, to strengthen each other. The second part of it is explanation. That is the explanatory grounds upon which the strength can be had and will be had. It is the promise that your God will come. God comes in mysterious ways, his wonders to perform. I can read of at least five different senses in which the Lord of glory comes in relationship to your life and mine. One of them is the daily experiences through which we pass. Behold, I, the Lord, stand at the door. He's on the outside, the lock's on the inside. I stand at the door and I, the Greek text says, keep on knocking. He will not force his way in. But he wants you to open the door. He wants you to hear the knocking and open the door. And if any man open the door, I will come into him and will sup with him and he with me. You understand all of that, Brother Lord? Not at all. But I know what it says. And I know that there is great comfort and blessed assurance that comes in what it says. Oh, my God. How scared those 11 men must have been on that mountain of Galilee when they heard Jesus the Christ to say, go into all the world, preach the gospel unto every creature. I wonder sometimes, did they ever hear the rest of them? Surely they did. Preach the gospel to every creature. Go teach all nations. Go make disciples of all the nations. How do you do it? Baptizing them into the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Or to say the same thing a different way. How do you do it? Teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you to teach them to observe. Then watch this part of it. Lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the world. 1965, in the interest of Brown Trail Preacher Training School, trying to get it started, knowing that Brother B.C. Good pastor had indicated a special interest in it. Invited me to come and sit down with him and let's talk about it. I went out, set up the appointment, 9 o'clock that morning. 1 hour. I had appointments in Nashville all day long, 1 hour at each place, until 4 o'clock. Caught a plane at 5 o'clock. Got back to Brown Trail for the elders' meeting at 7 o'clock. I thought, man, what a day. But anyhow, Brother Good Pastor was talking about our responsibility with regard to the Great Commission. And suddenly he began talking about his boyhood days. I thought he had changed the subject. But if Brother Good Pastor wants to talk, then I am anxious to listen. Talked about his home, his old boyhood home over in Livingston, just up in Stone State Park. Standing Stone, thank you, Mike. Standing Stone State Park. We've been over to that park. We've seen where the old church building used to be. It's not there anymore. But he said when he was a little boy and lived out in those rocks and those hills, his mother said to him one night, get a water bucket, go down to the spring and bring some water. Well, it's already dark. He's a little boy. He said, I was scared. I began to think about how narrow that trail is, how far it is to the spring, how many times I'd seen those big snakes going across that trail. He said, I was scared. But suddenly my daddy said, son, get 2 buckets. I'm going with you. And he said, Brother Roy, what a difference that made. This which had been such a horrifying ordeal all of a sudden becomes a delightful experience just because my daddy said, I'm going with you. And then he made his point. He said it must have been that way back there on that mountain when these men heard the master say, go into all the world. Did you ever think about that? Did you ever think about what John said? When he heard that, he must have turned to Peter and said to him, did you hear what he said? Us? Doesn't he know that all the world means includes Roman Empire? Doesn't he know they hate him? Doesn't he realize they crucified him? Doesn't he know they don't want to hear it? He said, go preach the gospel to everybody. How they must have been trembling or scared. But what a difference it had to make when they heard the master say, get 2 buckets, I'm going with you. I will be with you always, even to the end of the world. And may God help us to write that message down in our hearts. You don't do that job by yourself. I don't mind to tell you, simply and plainly, I claim the responsibilities that I have in teaching the gospel based upon that commission, the responsibilities to teach exactly what it says, recognize and respect those obligations, but I also claim that the Lord promised that He would be with you and me if we put the kingdom first, if we sought to do His will. I claim that part. And I don't mind to tell you, as I started out to tell you, that if it weren't for that part, the old man doing the talking right now would have quit a long, long time ago. Because the mountain is too high, the trail is too narrow, the obstacles are too many and too horrible for a stupid, weak, stumbling human being like the one doing the preaching to have to deal with day after day. But the Lord said, you don't climb that mountain by yourself. I will be with you. When you walk through the storm, keep your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark. What promises were given to these men? The marvelous blessings. Blessings are ahead, we have in verses 5 through 7. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as an hart, and the tongue of the dumb will sing. In the wilderness shall waters break out and streams in the desert. The parched land, the glowing sand, the American standard, shall become a pool of water. The habitation of dragons will be grass with reeds and rushes. We observe there is physical blindness, there is spiritual blindness. There is physical deafness, there is spiritual deafness. There are those who simply will not hear. There is physical crippleness, there is spiritual crippleness. When God comes in vengeance, in recompense and to save, things will be different. They will be great, they will be wonderful. There were better days ahead for Judah. Even the farmland was more prosperous, productive. But anybody who reads that has got to immediately think of the record of the Lord's life as given us in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Take those points one by one and just study Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John and see what Isaiah said nearly 800 years before. And I could wish that we could make that study with you, but we simply can't. But the record says, and highway, let's go down to number 4. And highway shall be there and a way. Don't have the time to discuss whether or not highway and way are two different things or whether it's one thing being looked at from two different viewpoints. After considerable study on the matter, my own conclusion is that it's the same way. That the Lord is talking about is simply the church of the living God. And that it's called a highway, but it's also called a way, because a highway is a road. Both of the words involve the idea of road. Both are roads, but not both are into what we have in mind, at least by the highway. One might be more of a trail. But an highway shall be there, and a way. It shall be called the way of holiness. These are the way these words imply. If there is the way and there is a reference to the church of the Lord, and without single solitary doubt there is, then the word way means, let's go to that one, Brother Bob, means that there has to be a beginning point, there has to be a journeying time, a sphere in which the traveling is to be done, there is to be a vehicle of travel, there is the instruction guide or manual, there has to be the goal, the ultimate goal. In this instance, the beginning point, of course, is planet Earth. The journeying time is the time given to each human being as he or she dwells upon this earth. The vehicle of this traveling is the New Testament church. Think about it. The only vehicle we have, the only spaceship, divine spaceship that we have, anybody has, to make this journey, this space journey from planet Earth to the eternal shores of glory itself, is the New Testament church. The only manual we've got is the New Testament itself. The Christ Himself is the captain of that spaceship. The apostles are the only authoritative assistants in connection with the operation of that spaceship. And the Bible, the New Testament, is our instructional guide, and we have no other instructional guide. We don't tamper with the manual. We're going to make that ship. Highway shall be there anyway. The Lord Himself said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. That certainly has to include the New Testament church. He is the head of the body of the church, Colossians 1:18. The Lord talked about that way, the straight gate, the narrow way, the wide gate, the broad way. The Lord in Matthew 7:13 and 14, in fact, talked about two gates and two ways and two inviters and two opposite directions, two kinds of travels or travelers and two destinies. Only one goes in the right direction, and only one can lead people to heaven. This one way is the Lord Himself, His gospel, His rules for life, His church, His kingdom. I appreciate the fact that the American Standard, in every instance, and a new number of passages at Acts, that do use the word, capitalize the word way. I did some checking to try to see if there's any justification for that, and I discovered that there is. The fact of the matter is, the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia points out that the way, to capital W, was one of the earliest titles applied to Christianity, volume 5, page 3076 in that little book. And so I appreciate the emphasis that the American Standard places on the word way in reference to the church of the Lord. And a highway shall be there. The Lord is the way. The church of the Lord is the way. The way of entrance into it. The way of salvation is explained to us. Salvation from alien sins. It's the way of continual cleansing conditioned upon our continual walking in the light. It's the way of having joy and having every spiritual blessing that there is to be had in the Christ. As said earlier, in the church of the Christ. And upon the terms of the gospel of Christ. It's the way of scriptural worship unto God. It's the way of our carrying out God's charge for us to strive to save souls. It's the way of sacred hope and blessed assurance with regard to the house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Luke 24, on that resurrection morning, the Lord coming down to a tremendously important point in talking to two disciples who didn't even know or recognize Him when He first began to talk to them. But the record says, Moses wrote, the Lord thy God will raise up unto thee a prophet from the midst of thee and of thy brethren like unto me. Him shall you hearken. Deuteronomy 18:17. The Lord Himself says in John 5:16, Moses wrote of me. Peter made the same point in Acts 3:22 and 23. But back to Luke 24. Beginning from Moses and from all the prophets, He interpreted unto them in all the scriptures the things concerning Himself. There is the rock bottom key, brethren, to studying the Bible, understanding that every word in it is about the Christ, the way. Great to be with you. Appreciate the opportunity.